dealing sort of playfully and deftly with the regular feature that our mass media gives us, especially the print media, every year around Eastertide, which is a denial of the resurrection, a personal attack on our Lord Jesus Christ, or something like that. So he penned this for his Easter edition, or his Easter column. I forget which year. This was published in 2007, and it was published originally in Sobrans, which was what he was writing for later in life, his own newsletter, when he got dropped from the National Review. In fact, why don't I right now sort of shift and talk a bit about his biography. What got me re-attentive to Joe Sobran was the interview that I did with John Beaumont on his book, The Mississippi Flows into the Tiber, which had a rather lengthy entry on Joe Sobran as one of the 469 or so converts written up in that book. So just to skim some of the biographical information about him, his name was Joseph Michael Sobran, Jr. He was a journalist and writer. He was born February 23rd, 1946 in Ypsilanti, Michigan, County, let's see, Washtenaw County, Michigan. He was born, in 46. He was converted in 61. Now, that's a rare thing. He was converted when he was 15 years old. That's when he was received into the church. He started taking Catholicism seriously when he was 14. He died on 30th of September, that's the Feast of St. Jerome, in the year 2010 in Fairfax, Virginia. He was raised by lapsed Catholic parents who divorced when he was 7 or 8. His parents gave him no instruction, never took him to the sacraments, and never sent him to a Catholic school. He started to read about the faith when he was 14 years old. He decided then that he wanted to become a Catholic. His public high school teacher attempted to talk him out of it, but he persisted and made his first communion as a teenager. He graduated from East Michigan University in English, and after graduation did Shakespearean studies. He lectured on a fellowship at the university in Shakespeare and in English. He worked at National Review. Now, that was a pretty big, 21 years he was at National Review, from 72 to 93. 18 years as a senior editor. He practiced the faith irregularly during the late 70s and early 80s, but he returned to the church during the papacy of Pope John Paul II. He was removed from National Review during a controversy in 1993 over articles alleged by the editor William F. Buckley, who was kind of a neocon. I don't want to say anything bad about the deceased, but he had his issues. William F. Buckley canned him on the spurious accusation that Sobran was an anti-Semite, which, of course, he was not. But he said certain things that were politically incorrect. And yes, William Buckley was certainly politically correct on certain subjects. So, having introduced him sort of with some biographical information, I'm going to continue this episode number 225, Happy Easter with Joe Sobran, with a column that he entitled The Optional Jesus. Now, here he's attacking the reinvention of our Lord under the pompous title of distinguishing the Christ of faith from the Jesus of history. This was kind of a fad that came in the 60s and 70s. He points out, of course, that the so-called historical Jesus that these unbelievers end up with is about as ahistorical as somebody like Pinocchio or the Stave Puff Marshmallow Man. In other words, they're on this sort of Arthurian quest to find the real Jesus, the historical Jesus, as opposed to the Christ of faith, who's made up by religious people. And their quest always leads them into something very much like what you think they would have made up had they made up Jesus. So this was originally published in 1998, when he was still syndicated, syndicated by the Universal Press Syndicate. It was after he was canned from National Review, interesting. So this is dated to 2007 in the edition that was published under in Sobran's. He says this, "You might think it would be hard to claim Jesus Christ for the sexual revolution. He did refuse to condemn a woman caught in adultery. but with the stern proviso that she go and sin no more. He said that if you look at a woman with lust, you've already committed adultery in your heart. He tightened up the Mosaic law that permitted divorce, all of which offers little encouragement for swingers. Nevertheless, the gay militant writer Terence McNally has written a play depicting Christ as a sodomite, though protests have forced its cancellation. In a similar spirit, Robert Funk, founder of the Jesus Seminar, wants to reject as inauthentic any gospel saying at odds with his own up-to-date creed, which espouses, among other things, quote, responsible, protected, recreational sex between consenting adults, end quote. Let me just say as an aside, Brother Andre, here as an aside, that the Jesus Seminar was this notorious, nasty, pseudo-intellectual gathering of a bunch of pompous leftist intellectuals who would go through the Gospels and, believe it or not, using red balls and black balls, decide which utterances attributed to Christ in the Gospel were authentic and which were not. It was sort of the red letter Jefferson Bible on steroids, and all of these guys made utter imbeciles of themselves. I don't think it's around anymore, but it was all the rage during the 90s when he wrote this. You're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Premium Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network, continuing with Joe Sobrin here. After 2,000 years, the most unlikely people still want to claim Jesus for their side, even when they aren't Christians, and often it seems when they hate Christianity. They usually say that the churches have twisted the simple original message of love, superimposing layers of dogma, theology, and repressive morality. Jesus was great, but ever since St. Paul, it's been downhill, what with St. Augustine, Cotton Mather, and all those popes. For the last two centuries, a curious breed of demi-Christian has tried to disengage the historical Jesus from all that dogma and stuff. What did Jesus really say and do? The trouble is that nearly everything we know about Jesus stems from the four Gospels, all of which were written by believers in the resurrection, the central dogma. In a sense, all classic Christian theology is the working out of the implications of the resurrection, considered as the fact that the Christians insisted, even under torture, it was. St. Augustine himself said bluntly that without the resurrection, Christianity was pointless. That hasn't stopped the hunt for the historical Jesus, the presumably real figure behind the Gospels. Since the only documents we have attest a life of miraculous deeds, supernatural orientation, and eschatological purpose, the belief that a stripped-down, natural life of Jesus can be reconstructed is totally at odds with the records. In her new book, The Human Christ, The Search for the Historical Jesus, Charlotte Allen tells the story of the long campaign in which scholarship has blended with wishful thinking to find or fashion a series of historical Jesuses who have turned out to be strikingly ahistorical. In 1909, George Tyrrell, a modernist Catholic theologian, observed that the historical Jesus of German scholars was actually, quote, the reflection of a liberal Protestant face seen at the bottom of a deep well, end quote. As an aside here, Tyrrell was a modernist heretic, but he here shows that he at least had something of a sense of humor. I do hope he saved his soul eventually. In other words, says Allen, quote, the liberal researchers had found a liberal Jesus. The same can be said of the Jesus searchers of every era. The deists found the deist, the romantics found a romantic, the existentialists an existentialist, and the liberationists a Jesus of class struggle. Supposedly equipped with the latest critical and historical tools, the scientific quest for the historical Jesus has nearly always devolved into theology, ideology, and even autobiography. End quote from Allen.